Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and welcome to the program. Joining me this week is author, activist, bar owner, and Cleveland Browns fan, Sam Murphy. Sam, welcome.
Hey, Simon, thank you for that rousing introduction, and it's very proud to be on here on the day that the Cleveland Indians are going to clinch the top wild card berth in the American League and host a home game.
Wow.
Hey, it's exciting. We've winning the World Series. I hope it stops now.
Hey, Sam, I have a food story for you. I live in a small town where the definition of haute cuisine is a seven-layer burrito from Taco Hell. All right. Well, I did manage to find myself some haute cuisine, and at a most unlikely place. We have a discount store called the Dollar Tree, where everything is indeed a dollar. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, it's a buck. And I found that they sell bags of frozen Japanese gyozas, otherwise known as potstickers, and boy, they're yummy. All right, are you a potsticker guy?
Not a frozen potsticker guy. I'm not a big. I had my Japanese and Chinese food when my kids were younger, and because my first wife couldn't cook a lick, and we did a lot of Chinese food on the weekend and leftovers on Sunday. So yeah, I went through that, and I'm glad I got it out of my system. So, but I understand. They are good. I'm sure that were they good?
Oh, just wonderful. And way better than a seven-layer burrito from Taco Hell.
Oh, my God. And that was only 50 cents, right? The seven-layer taco from Hell? That only 50 cents?
I don't know. I didn't ask.
Does Taco Bell charge anything over a dollar for that slop? You know, I don't
Hell yeah. You know, you go to Taco Hell and buy for three people. You're looking at $20.
Wow.
Right.
Well, Taco Bell's logo should be a skull and crossbones. And I don't mean a pirate skull and crossbones.
Right.
You know? I mean a skull and crossbones from the SS.
Right. Also joining us this week is well-known and well-respected L.A.-based attorney Peter Haven. Peter, great to talk to you again.
Oh, it's great to be here. Likewise, thank you. And Sam and the entire city of Cleveland and the great state of Ohio, I want to wish you all the best today. It's a good day to be an Indians fan and a Browns fan. And in my experience, Cleveland and Ohio always provide very good things. So my compliments to the state of Ohio.
Well, thank you. It's been a while since we've had the Cleveland Indians in the playoffs. And are the Browns winning?
Oh, yes, they're winning. And I think they're going
to
win.
What was it, 17-6 or something like that?
17-6, under 2.5 minutes to play.
Wow. Wow, and I took the Browns too, so I'm happy about that in my football pool.
So, Peter, are you a potsticker fan?
Well, I love all kinds of food, so odds are if you put a potsticker in front of me, I would eat it. It's been a while since I've had one. I just picture this big doughy lump underneath a steaming metal dome. If that's a potsticker, then yeah, I love them.
Oh, no. These are small, yummy little bites.
Well, I pretty much eat anything.
Right, little dipping sauce of grated ginger and teriyaki. Oh, you're off to the races.
Well, it sounds good, but, you know, hearing you guys talk about a giant seven-layered burrito for either 50 cents or a dollar, all I can think is, man, you really get what you pay for, don't you?
Good point. I mean, I'm amazed, you know, and Taco Bell, I don't know what they advertise in where you guys live. Around here, it's like, we're open till 5 a.m. Yeah, you know, gee, I wonder what you're getting in there at 4 a.m. for your seven layer burrito of hell.
What you don't see is what you get.
I don't think the people going in at 3:30 in the morning give a crap what's in the Taco Bell stuff, right?
Well, they may not give a you know what then, but they'll give a you know what later.
And it will hurt your you know what when they're dead. They remember that when they're sitting on the toilet.
We've gotten off to a good start, I can tell.
I don't want to challenge the food channel as being the most popular food place to visit. So, let's get off the subject of food and get on to the main course.
Oh,
well, what a fun.
We were on the toilet, so let's get off the toilet. How about that?
All right. Well, let's get right back into the toilet. Let's talk about the government shutdown. Sam, I know you're a cruiser, but what did you make of the green eggs and ham speech by your good buddy Ted?
Hey, I resent you calling me a big fan of Ted Cruz. I'm not a. I think what he did was absolute. Well, it was good politics. It was all about Ted Cruz. That was it, and his and the people who are obsessed with him. There was no way. Rand Paul's attempted filibuster was to open our eyes about the NSA and to stop the guy from getting the vote. He procedurally was in the right position to do that. He could only go for 13 hours. And once he stopped, you know, the vote took place. Ted Cruz was just a bunch of BS because Harry Reid called the meeting the next day, he was going to lose on procedure. So he had it all screwed up. He just totally screwed up. It wasn't really a filibuster because he didn't stop anything. So I was disappointed in that, and it was just him getting up there and talking. And, you know, and although I will tell you, Saturday we get a letter in the, my wife and I get a letter in the mail from our insurance supplier, Anthem, and lo and behold, and we have a very crappy health care plan as it is right now. Lo and behold, it's not going down, it's going up. So then what I thought Ted Cruz was a schmuck for doing what he did and the Republicans, I started to say, maybe they're onto something. Because I'm middle class, my wife's middle class, now we've got to pay more money for health care. And then there's a nice little thing on this that says, come October 1st, go to www. You may be available for a subsidy. So I guess Warren Buffett's secretary will be subsidizing my health care plan that's going up to over $1,000 a month now with this Affordable Care Act. So I was one of those people at first said, hey, let's get this thing implemented. We need national health care. Republicans and Democrats need to work together. You know, it's too expensive, this, and that. And now I see why the Republicans were stonewalling it, because guess what? My rates went up. And I'm sure millions of other Americans are getting letters in the mail from the insurance carrier saying, guess what? Your rates are going up. The insurance companies are laughing all the way to the bank, and they're not going to be providing people with better health care, cheaper prices, and whatnot. And so on that point, just from my own personal experience, I hope Obamacare is delayed for a year so they can fix it. Because obviously there's a lot of problems with this thing. Good intention, terrible implementation.
Right. I really feel that the Republicans are, rather than, you know, trying to negotiate, are just trying to stonewall. That doesn't sound like a great idea to me.
I'm trying to find my way. What's that letter due yet? So I'm going to read it because it you know, we got it, and I'm sure everyone else is getting ones who. I get my health care through my wife's company. And I'm sure, so everyone is waking up and getting these letters, or we'll get them Monday or shortly after when this comes in. And when you see all the Republicans are stopping it because, as Peter's pointed out correctly, so they hate Obama. If he does anything, and I'm not one of those people, okay? If he does something good, I'll be the first person in the world to say, good job, Mr. President, okay? But when I look back over the last year, this guy has not been selling. I know he was in an election and this and that, but when he took office, he went after gun control. He went after other issues, and he had to sell this. You know, it didn't work. You know, he's not going to fight the gun lobby, yet now he waits till last week to give a speech to a bunch of college students, of course, who are on his side all the time, about his health care stuff. And where's this guy been selling his plan and tweaking it and making it better? I mean, I think he's got a lot to answer for, because all he has done in his administration is provide many exemptions to anybody but the middle class and the other people. And I think that's wrong, and he has to share some of the burden for that. You can't point the fingers at the Republicans and say, shame on you. You guys are, how dare you do this and threaten a government shutdown? Because when I get a letter, and as millions of other Americans have gotten, that says, hey, your premiums are going up, and, of course, the health providers are taking advantage of this, then this is a crappy plan. Because it was supposed to lower our prices, give us better, coverage, and it's in my case, in my wife's case, and I'm sure for most people in their 50s, as we are, they're all getting the shaft too, if they're on health care. I also know, I was talking to some people at PNC Bank, where I do my banking. All of them have had their hours cut back to 39 hours, 37 hours, 36 hours. So none of them are working full time anymore. So that's a bad thing, too. And so those two things that in my own personal experience with this health care is it's a shit deal, and it needs to be reworked by both powers that be, and they need to delay implementation and work on a national health care plan that makes sense to all.
Peter, Sam needs to take a breath. So.
Well, Sam has provided us with some very good facts there. Now, I'm just curious about a few things, Sam. You say you get the insurance through your wife's company. So she works for some company, and she's an insured under their policy. And I guess, what do they do, just deduct it from her paycheck, or how does it work?
That's cool. Yeah, they deduct it out of her paycheck. No.
So she pays...
No, we pay it directly. We pay for the whole thing. My wife is corrupting me. Her company... They used to. They took it away. We have to pay for it. They allowed us to keep it, be part on it. Got it? But we have to pay the whole thing.
So they provide you with the insurance, and they tell you what the premium is, and then you guys have to issue a check for the premium. They don't deduct it from a paycheck.
That's correct.
Now, Simon, we just had a very important moment on this show. Do you know what it was?
Sam's
wife just unofficially appeared in the background. I could hear her.
Yeah, I think Sam's wife should pick up the phone.
I don't know, Sam.
Well,
what do you think about
I'll
that?
Let her explain it to her. Well, you know what? I'm going to put my wife on the phone and let her explain our health care policy. Peter, John, and listening audience, this is the lovely Juliet Hoffman Moffi. She will explain to you all about our health care.
Oh.
Hello.
Pleasure. Pleasure to make your acquaintance. You're
nice
Sam's
to meet
you,
Julia.
Always hear about you guys. Hi, Simon. I know you.
Oh, look at that.
What's up?
Well, we wanted you to explain to us the impact of this new affordable health care legislation. Sam did a pretty good summary of it, but I think it came from you that he was getting it.
Well, this is how it works. I used to get health insurance through my work, but then one day they decided that no longer will they provide it. So I, for the first time in my life, I'm from Holland, as Sam has mentioned to you in the past. I always had life insurance all my life, or health insurance. Then I lived in Israel. In Israel, there always was health insurance. And then I came to America, and then most of the time I either had it through my then husband and then through work. So to me, health insurance was not a luxury. That was something you were supposed to have, no matter what. So one day I was notified through my work, we no longer will pay your health insurance. So I panicked. To me, that was like, as of tomorrow, you don't have your home. So I immediately went shopping for health insurance, and that's what I did. And I then for a month was without health insurance, which I think was a horrible idea. I shopped and shopped, found health insurance, and paid for it, all of it, out of my own pocket. No subsidy whatsoever. So Sam is on that same plan, and also our children that are allowed to be up till age 26. Then that was being raised and raised, and so we had to pay higher premiums. And then in order to save some money, we started to lower our, or make our deductible higher, like as opposed to have a 1,000 deductible, we started to do a 2,000 deductible. We came to the point that we now almost only have a 10,000 deductible, which means that it really only covers it when you go to the hospital, you're covered. Because we figured we could always come up with $10,000. And we are like maybe the lucky people, because most people in America really cannot come up with $10,000, can they? Because most Americans live paycheck to paycheck. I see the girls in my office, how they live and work. So we pay our premium every month, and I receive a letter in the mail this Friday, and it says, "Dear valued Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield subscriber, as of January 1st, we no longer can honor your plan because as of the Affordable Health Act, whatever they want to call it, you need to have a new plan, but don't worry, we will continue, and we found another plan for you, but now your monthly premium will go up by $500, and if you don't do anything, it'll be as usual deducted out of your checking account, and you will be covered."
Wow.
Now,
So if I don't do anything, automatically they'll enroll me in a different plan. We'll send you in a later letter what is covered. So probably won't be even covering what is covered right now. Like, you know, we have like free physicals, like preventive care, you know, like yearly checkups and, you know, yearly... as a woman, you know, your yearly gynecology visits, and that's the mammogram, you know, the stuff like all that that we all get for free in our plan. I'm sure the one they're enrolling me now into won't have any of that.
Now, let me ask a question. Is it possible that you might be able to find a better deal through this... thing that starts on Tuesday, I can't remember the term.
Oh, no, yeah, there is something else. They did say, and if, there is an option that we can go on the government website and see if we qualify for any of the government subsidized plans. There might be such a thing, but then somebody else told us, who's pretty knowledgeable, and they said, you know, we can go to some health insurance broker, but you could qualify for those kind of plans if you make 400% of the poverty level. And I don't know how that goes by state, but in Ohio, the poverty level for a single person is if you make $14,000 a year. So I guess 400%, that is 4 times 14, so that's $56,000 a year. So if you make $56,000 a year and under, then you might qualify for a subsidized, for some sort of subsidy in a health plan from the government.
Mm. Now, that really doesn't sound very very good.
No, it doesn't sound good at all, because you know, let's say a single person makes $50,000. You know you do not get any subsidy from the government, and the subsidy that you will get might be so minuscule, And at $60,000, a single person who tries to drive a car, rent an apartment, and might still be responsible for helping their child in college or whatever, is not going to be able to afford a half-decent health insurance plan.
Yeah. Now, there are many things that you said that are very interesting. If I could, I just want to talk about a few of them. So the letter, in effect, is telling you that these changes will go into – they will start in January. And I guess one of the points that Simon raised is that you have until January to see if you can find a better deal. I agree with you that it doesn't sound like you're going to qualify for any kind of subsidized health insurance, because I think that you correctly point out that that's for people who fall below a certain income threshold, and it doesn't sound like you're going to qualify for that, which is in a way a good thing, in a big picture thing. But I do, it's also my understanding that there's going to be a lot of competition amongst healthcare providers over the next few months, and that people will be able to look for other forms of insurance that could provide the same coverage at lower rates. I'm not an expert on it, but I do think that your friend who suggested that you talk to a health insurance broker, I do think that's probably good advice, because they may be able to get you a better deal. I know that's a lot of work and effort, but it's up to you whether you want to do that or pay the extra $500 a month.
Well, of course I'm going to shop, but I have to tell you, I found the letter, actually, and I just love how they word this. I love how they say this stuff, and that's what really is not pleasant. It says, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield is discontinuing your individual health benefit plan because it doesn't meet all the requirements of the new healthcare reform laws, also called the Affordable Care Act. As a convenience to you, we are transitioning you to a healthcare reform compliant plan upon your renewal date. Your current individual health benefit plan will remain in effect until January 1st, blah, blah, blah. Don't worry, in bold letters. We've got options for you. As a convenience to you, we are transitioning you to a healthcare reform compliant plan upon your renewal date. This new plan, blah, 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 is available, da, da, da. You don't need to do anything. We'll automatically transition you, and we'll just deduct X amount out of your account. You know, and then you know, and then they go on, and then they say, you can call an agent, and then again in bold letters, you can also check into whether you're eligible for government subsidy to help you pay for health coverage if you're eligible. So the whole thing is, I'm just saying, because I read a lot of letters, I'm a court stenographer by profession, so I get a lot of exhibits, Peter, to mark and read and listen to a lot of mumble jumble.
Yep, believe me.
But,
I know what that's like.
So I know all of this, in the end, we're just all going to pay a whole lot more money and getting a whole less coverage, because let's make it simple. We're going to add a lot of people to healthcare that are currently not on the plan, are not insured. Somebody has to pay for this. And who's going to pay for it? Somebody who can maybe a little bit afford to pay for this.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. Now, you said something earlier that I thought was interesting. You said that when you lived at home in Holland and when you lived in Israel, you didn't have to worry about health insurance.
No, it would be taken automatically out of your pay.
So, and who provided? Was that government-instituted health insurance, or how did that work?
It was always taken, well, I was very young, so I never had to worry about it anyway, because it would come out of my parents. The thing is, everybody pays. Whenever you worked, whoever works automatically, just like here, whatever you make, it comes, it's like a percentage. It comes out of like taxes. If you make $1,000, 30% comes out. So the same percentage comes out of your pay when you, for health care.
So, and I take
now,
it.
Now, if you will, yeah, go ahead.
Go. You go ahead. You go ahead. It's interesting. Go ahead.
And so now, if you wanted a little bit better insurance, besides what the government, you know, what you got through the government, you could insure yourself on top of that. So that's what my parents would do. Like, we would have automatically, everybody had to take the government insurance. You had that, but no matter what. But then, like, say, my mother would had to go to the hospital. She wouldn't want to be in a room with somebody else. She wanted to be guaranteed in a room by herself. So my father would take out extra insurance and pay for it, so that way she would be guaranteed to be in a room by herself.
Yeah.
But that was his choice to pay for it.
Yeah.
And Peter, you know, I grew up in England, and I also lived in Canada. And both health systems get criticized a lot, you know, but it actually works. You know, people pay, you know, right out of their paycheck. And in Canada, it's actually not very much. It's something like, you know, $30 or $40 a month. And, you know, generally, a company will, you know, give you a top up, if you will. While I was in Canada, it cost me virtually nothing. And, you know, all drugs, for example, were free. Drugs, not as in marijuana.
Unless prescribed.
Right. Well, no, they, I don't think they prescribe it up there. But, the system has flaws. There's no doubt about it. But, it trucks along.
You know, every system has flaws, every single system, in my opinion. You can't find anything that's perfect that's run and operated by human beings anywhere, because we're fallible. But what you've all but just described, and now you've described it in four countries, Holland, Israel, England, Canada, and also I should add that I lived in Australia for a year, and it was my understanding that the healthcare system in Australia was similar to the ones, Simon, that and both of you have described in Europe. And so what it sounds like is all of these nations have some sort of basic, minimal government-subsidized form of healthcare. And healthcare, when you get right down to it, is really just a means of paying for healthcare. That's really what it comes down to.
Right.
You have a government subsidized system of providing healthcare coverage to people, which basically means there's a way that the government provides to pay for medical services. And if people want to go a little bit higher, they can. If they want the private room, as you described, or
right,
coverage.
They want to go, the family physician had hours for people who, you know, didn't have the private insurance on top, then you had to sit a little longer in the waiting room. And the people who paid a little extra could go in the morning in the private hours. So
yeah,
the doctor made a little more on those patients.
Sure.
And why not? That's fair. Then
well,
you had the choice.
Yeah, you have a choice. I think in all, you know, countries, there's always a bit of a choice. You can always pay a little bit more and get a little bit more, almost always, in my opinion.
Right.
What you've described is something that in America we have talked about for decades. We've talked about having a nationalized system of healthcare coverage of one form or another. But even today, as we now sit here talking, even today, right now, we don't have that. We don't have that because it hasn't quite gone into effect yet. This legislation that was passed and approved by the United States Supreme Court was really the first attempt to try to cultivate that. Now, if I hear what both of you are saying, you're saying that one of the things that America should try to do is have some sort of national system of health care coverage. Maybe this isn't perfect, but it seems like you're both suggesting that in your experience, that's what countries do for their citizens.
Well, I think a westernized, educated, rich country should provide national health care.
And I agree.
It's like a minimum. It's a minimum that we need to do.
I agree.
Just like we send our children to kindergarten and first grade, everybody should be able to have health care.
That's right. At a minimum level, they should.
At a minimum level, that's what we do. And we provide it anyway. Now, if people have it or not, it's just totally messed up.
Yeah, well, it is totally messed up, and it's unfortunate because a lot of people don't have any health insurance at all. And I'm a person who I used to work for a big company, a big law firm, and I left and I went out on my own. And when I did, they told me when I left I could continue the same health care coverage that I got at my old firm, which was substantial, but I would have to start paying for it. And I actually tried to do that, but somehow the paperwork got screwed up. And it was a big price tag. It was something like $700 a month. And I actually sent in the paperwork for it, and they claimed they never got the paperwork, and they just discontinued my insurance. And I thought to myself, well, there you go. I've just, I went from being in the penthouse to being a guy on the streets with no insurance coverage at all. And I went like that for a long time. I just took my chances. And it's not a great feeling.
No,
you never
it's
know.
Not.
It's terrible. You know, you'd be driving a car and you'd think if I'm in a catastrophic injury. I used to worry that if I was catastrophically injured, it would be my family members who would suffer because I'd be comatose or something and I wouldn't have insurance. And the doctor bills would mount, and my poor family would feel compelled to dig into their pockets to pay. And I felt horrible about that, and I didn't want that to happen. You know, the bottom line is we're all saying the same thing. We're all saying the same thing.
So but what I don't understand is the unfairness of the system that they put in place. That's what I don't get.
Well,
I feel... Here I'm paying taxes, and I pay almost, I see like one-third of, I'm a salaried employee. I don't work as an independent contractor. So one-third goes automatically out of my paycheck every 2 weeks. So my tax dollars go to pay for government workers to their state-of-the-art packages of health care, pension, everything. But I pay my own health care. I pay for my own 401k. I pay for my own savings that I try to have, et cetera, et cetera. So why am I paying for all that, but nothing is paid for me?
Well,
do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Well,
and
absolutely.
So for me,
it's clear as a bell.
I want to pay taxes. I have no problem. But then, I don't mind to pay another 7% or 10% or whatever it should be. But everybody should pay that, and then everybody has the same health insurance.
You know, I would love to see that. But
and then it would be equal. Then the person who works at McDonald's 40 hours a week at a minimum wage, which is terrible, by the way, which is not a living wage, but that person should pay also 7% towards his health care. But the person who makes $2 million a year also pays 7%. So it all evens out. That's how it works in Holland. So nobody suffers.
Well, I think that if we could achieve something like that, I substantially agree with everything you said, that would be a wonderful thing. Now, can you see any problems in America with trying to implement a program like that?
We do it with school taxes, even when you live in a neighborhood that's a bit... where do most Americans want to buy their homes? They go to nice school districts. Why?
Yeah,
when they
right.
have kids there, the kids go to nice school. But even when they don't have children there, normally those are the places where the houses are nicer. And then when there comes a time to sell their home, their house doesn't lose value, so they can resell it because hopefully a young family with kids will want to move in there. So... they don't lose value, and when a tax levy comes for the school, they will vote for it because they think their home won't lose value, right?
Yeah.
Normally, that's what people do in America, most people who care a little bit about their money.
You're absolutely right.
Isn't that the same?
Well, there are many similarities, but there are a few differences, and the differences, unfortunately, are big. You know, there are a couple of entities that we've talked about in this conversation, and they're different than the thing you just described. And there's one big industry that dominates healthcare in America, and that's the insurance industry. And they're massive.
Yeah, they don't want it. Yeah.
Well, they want something, but they have vested financial interests in getting certain things, and they're powerful. They have powerful control over something else. But there's also another factor to consider, and that's the medical community. Because doctors and physicians and medical providers also constitute powerful political interests. And they're probably not the only two. There's a third, if you think about it, and that's the pharmaceutical industry. The pharmaceutical industry is probably more massive than the insurance and medical industries combined. I don't know. I'm guessing at that. But it just seems to me that pharmaceutical industry drives all aspects of healthcare these days. And, you know, these are just three major large political constituencies that get involved in any discussion of healthcare, and they're very powerful. And I don't know how all the players make decisions in this regard, and I don't know how the politics works behind closed doors, but I feel fairly certain that these political entities are exercising tremendous influence. And so when you talk about trying to achieve a level of health care, a safety net for people in this country, as you both described and experienced, which we all agree is something that a good country should do for its citizens. I think all countries should try to do it for its citizens, but certainly the ones you've described, so-called westernized, developed, wealthier democracies. It should be a part of citizenship. But unfortunately, the political process here is so aggravated that it's very difficult to implement change. And we've waited decades for the very change that hasn't even occurred yet. And even now, it's threatened to be derailed. And I'm not sure if the parties that are opposing its implementation right now are discussing the things that we're discussing, which is trying to address a problem. They just seem to be discussing a way of derailing it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And at this issue, I don't like Republicans, Democrats. I like neither one of them. They are not looking at the issue that's really important, is that all American citizens should have health care. They are not looking at a solution. They are just looking at, this is not a political issue. This is a financial, this is way more, they need to look at a financial issue. It's a financial issue.
Well, it's a financial issue, but it's also, in my opinion, it's a humanity issue. It's how we feel about our people, and you know, if you have a family, you want everybody in your family to be healthy and happy, and you want to provide for them. Well, in many respects, and I know it's awful to say it, but I think that's what government should do for its citizens. It should be like a family. You want to try and help your family members, but unfortunately, in my opinion, what you said a moment ago is unfortunately not believed by many people. You said it's not a political decision, and I personally tend to agree with you. But unfortunately, there are people whose livelihoods are making everything a political decision.
Well, I'll give you a decision, like a story. Like, I take a lot of medical depositions too, and I hear the doctors talk, and they say, you know, like 2 years ago or so, or I'm going to say 5 years ago, an orthopedic surgeon, when he did a hip replacement, he would bill, like, say, $2,500 for a hip replacement. He would get reimbursed by the insurance company, say, $1,800.
Yep.
Now, the same orthopedic surgeon has to still do the hip replacement. He has to pay more for the use of the OR. His medical malpractice insurance is up out of the wazoo because of you, Peter.
Oh,
now
you really got me going. I'm going to talk to you about that, Missy. No, you're not. There's a lot of truth to that. And I'm going to address that, but keep going.
So, I'm kidding.
No,
and then
there's a lot
in
of
the
truth
end,
to what you say. Keep going.
And then he goes on, and he gets reimbursed by the insurance company, and he gets $700 for his hip replacement.
Well,
that he did.
No, wait,
I'm not done. So then he gets $700. Meanwhile, we have like Highmark, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield in Pittsburgh, PA. Plus, there's UPMC, University of Pittsburgh Medical. They are the two big insurance companies in Pittsburgh who are fighting each other, who is going to insure who and what hospitals they're going to cover. And they want to merge, but they don't want to give them the monopoly. And it's lawsuits, and it's outrageous going on. Meanwhile, they have so much money that they have high-risk investments. The Pittsburgh Post Gazette, the insurance companies.
Okay, yeah. Okay, keep going.
You know, Blue Shield, Blue Cross, and UPMC, you know, that both insurance companies. They have so much money that they do the highest risk investments that they can possibly do because they don't know what to do with their money. Then every year the Post Gazette publishes the salaries of the CEOs of these companies, the bonuses they give themselves while they're, you know, in their positions. And it makes you sick to your stomach. It's like, you know, I'm not talking like thousands. I'm talking millions of dollars. They buy up everything. Every building is called UPMC. It's like they bought up half the city.
Just think about that for a moment. Those people make millions, millions, and millions of dollars. They are not going to give up their financial lifeblood very easily. They are
and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So me as the consumer buying health insurance,
I
don't get a break.
Nope.
The doctor is not getting a break. The only one who walks laughing to the bank is the insurance
man. I wouldn't cut the doctors that much slack. What you said a moment ago is true, and it was a point that I made 2 or 3 weeks ago on the show. I said that it's been my experience from doing litigation, whenever there's a medical bill, that what the insurance company ends up paying the doctors is significantly less than what the doctors bill. And that, unfortunately, is a byproduct of just capitalism and the economy. The doctors rely upon the insurance companies for guaranteed payment. And the insurance companies, in return, become very sophisticated at scrutinizing doctor bills. You know, my father's a doctor, and he used to come home and complain all the time about how doctors frequently overbilled and frequently ordered procedures and conducted tests and did things because they were businessmen, too, and they were trying to make money. So there is a checks and balance system that's at work here. And to a certain extent, the insurance companies are sophisticated in scrutinizing doctors' bills and cutting them down to what the insurance company believes is a reasonable payment. And here's the catch. it may not go over well in the medical community, but the medical community keeps relying on insurance companies to get paid. And for every, you know, there are literally many doctors out there that want to establish relationships with insurers, that want to network with them, because then they become a part of being in a provider network, which is
right.
a type of endorsement, and then they get caught in a pattern and practice of repeatedly being paid every month. And isn't that what everybody wants to do in our economy and anywhere in the world? You want to get a monthly paycheck. Some people, I mean, you obviously want to get as big as one as you can get, but you want to have guaranteed income.
How about the Michael Jackson debacle?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, and I'm also glad that we also talked about the role of lawyers in all of this. A couple of things.
Right. Did you know that propofol doctor was being paid $150,000 a month?
Well, I did not know that. It does not surprise me. Look, when I heard about Michael Jackson dying and I heard his age, I immediately drew the conclusion that he'd been over-medicated, because you just don't die like that unless there's a specific cause that they can show you. A healthy adult male doesn't just keel over one day normally unless he's under the influence of some type of psychopharmacological cocktail. And if there's a cocktail mix of drugs in his system, the first person you want to look to is who's helping him to do that. Now, I definitely got the feeling immediately when I heard about Michael Jackson's death that Michael Jackson was a guy who basically shopped for doctors. Now, I don't know if that's entirely true, but it sure seemed like it was true to me, because I believe that he would go to anybody who would give him whatever he wanted to have, provided he paid them for it.
But there's one thing, though, Peter. I'm sure that every insurance company denied that claim.
Well, how do you think? There you go. That just supports my.
So he paid for it.
He paid for it.
He paid for it.
And I got news for you. If a doctor has a cash cow sitting like a comatose patient, and he can suck money out of them all the time, he's going to keep on doing it. And it's going to have
right.
these kinds of consequences. So that's not a problem with insurance. In fact,
it has to do with
people
being non-ethical.
But it's a two-way street. I mean, Michael Jackson
yeah.
wasn't looking out for himself, and apparently nobody in his entourage was looking out for him either. And
no.
apparently, even if there was somebody in his entourage saying, "Don't go to this guy," he either didn't listen.
He'd find somebody else.
You go shop around. You go forum shopping, and you got to watch out. Everybody's got to try and protect themselves. Now, by the way, in my opinion, the same thing happens in the legal industry. You know, you go to one lawyer who tells you, "Look, you got a problem here. You're going to have to settle, or you're going to have to cop a plea and do some time. You're going to have to do that, because this is where you're going." And if the guy is rich and powerful and doesn't like hearing that, he just goes to somebody else who tells him what he wants to hear. And
right.
that eventually leads to trouble. And by the way, you know, that's my experience with some of the, you know, cases I've worked on. I felt that people just went to somebody who would just hear them, tell them what they want to hear, and then they had predictable results. Now, the other thing that you mentioned was malpractice insurance. Now, I don't know to what extent other states have implemented the same kinds of laws, but California in the 70s, all the doctors got together and they basically flexed their political muscles, and they told the state legislature, they said, look.
And they put a cap.
They put a cap on it. And they said, look, if you don't put a cap on medical malpractice, we're going to leave. They had all kinds of threats. We're going to leave. We're going to flee the state. We can't do business here. The lawyers are eating us alive, blah, blah, blah. So the legislature listened, and in 1970s, they passed something here that was basically a medical malpractice cap. And what that means is that you can recover whatever out-of-pocket damages medical malpractice truly causes, you can recover for that. If you suffer some debilitating condition and you're going to spend a lifetime medical care that's necessary, then you can recover those damages. But one of the things that the cap did is it said that, you know, for pain, suffering, and emotional distress, your cap is limited to $250,000. Now, that was $250,000 back in the 1970s, and that still exists today. That means that if you, say, have a child who's, say, you know, 10, 12, 15 years old, and for whatever reason you go see a doctor, and that doctor is negligent, and that negligent results in, God forbid, the death of that child, the emotional distress damage caused by that negligent act is limited to $250,000. And
that's terrible.
You'll note from that hypothetical I just gave you that there are no economic damages because the person's life is lost.
And that
you
never changed?
Well, it hasn't changed because the medical lobby got it into place, and it's still there, and it hasn't changed. Now, there is an exception to that rule, and if the doctor is basically does something intentional to cause the death of the child that's not negligent, then you can recover punitive damages in that kind of situation,
mm-hmm.
and you can pop the cap. But the point I'm trying to make is that it's very complicated to try to address these problems and not create more problems. And it's just a sad fact of the complicated world in which we live. Now, I had a medical malpractice a while ago, and it was very similar to the fact pattern I just described to you. It involved a 25-year-old boy who was killed in a hospital, and it was very clearly the result of negligence, and it was borderline reckless conduct, and they just flat out killed him. And the emotional distress component was basically capped at $250,000, and you can get some additional damages on top of that, but that's it. And so there's always this balancing act that takes place. And so it's very difficult to parcel everything up and say, this is the bright line, this is the bright line, this is the bright line, this is the bright line. And the bigger a country is and the more complicated it is and the more people are in it and the more stratified the economic structures are and the racial structures are and the cultural structures are, and then you factor in the political interests and the business interests and, you know, you got a mess.
I agree, and don't get me wrong. I totally believe in medical malpractice. And
well, I'm not saying I do.
I'm
not saying I do. Most of those claims are frivolous. The doctors had a very good point.
But the thing is, I do, because you know what? It makes the doctors cautious, and normally, when things really happen, and it's not the doctor's fault, and stuff happens, and they're human too. Juries don't find for those cases anyway. I see that here. I see a lot here, and unless it's absolutely blatant negligence and all that, and if they settle out of court, the settlements are never outrageous. They're always very reasonable, and you know the cases just go away, and then that's why they have insurance and all that. So I just said it a little bit as a joke, too. But I'm just saying...
But there's a lot of truth. There's a lot of truth to what you say.
But the thing is, to me, you know, I think in Europe, too, when the doctors, and Peter or Simon, you would agree with me, to go through college, medical school, residency, to become a doctor in the United States costs a lot of money. To go to medical school in Europe is probably a third, if not a fifth, of the cost that it is in the U.S.
You've just touched on another problem.
A fifth.
Right.
You've just touched on another issue.
And then once this doctor finally comes out of school and then he specializes a little. And I have to say something. We do have the best doctors in the world and the best hospitals in the world because people come from all over the world to come to our hospitals. And, you know, and we are the most advanced, and we were the first ones to have MRI machines. So, you know, I'm saying we do have a wonderful, wonderful medical society and everything, you know. So don't get me wrong on that part. I'm just saying I don't feel they're overpaid. But I'm also saying they could sometimes have to do with a little bit less. We all pay, take a little bit out of our paycheck, just like everybody else. And the insurance companies pay themselves a little bit less salary. And we could have a decent health insurance for everybody. It's not that hard.
I totally agree. But there are people in this world who believe that they shouldn't give up.
Who are greedy.
Yeah. They shouldn't give up a dollar unless they absolutely have to. That's just their philosophy and their way. And that's it.
And that's the bottom line. And when I see, you know, when I see little children or 10-year-old children or 9-year-old children walking bow-legged down the street, you know it's because they didn't get to see the pediatrician on time. It's not necessary anymore.
I don't know that to a medical certainty, but like you, I see that. And, you want to believe that that could have been prevented.
Yeah,
and even if that particular thing couldn't have been prevented, you want to believe that you're doing everything in your power to prevent that.
Or like when I was I'm a grandmother, and I just had my daughter had a baby in the state of New York. You know, she lives in Long Beach, and the pediatrician said to her, when the baby has a fever, the law in New York is up till 2 months. She has to bring the baby to the hospital, and the baby has to undergo a spinal tap. I was there when he said that to her. I said, are you kidding me? He said, my hands are tied. That is the law in New York State. And I'm thinking, why? The spinal tap would be more dangerous than keeping the baby at home and, you know, the local pediatrician taking care of the baby, you know, of the fever at that moment. But why? It's probably in effect because of the infant rate, death rate in the state of New York, and they didn't take the risk, and a lot of kids don't get to see a pediatrician on time.
Well,
and they just made that law.
Okay, folks. We have a caller.
Please call it.
Right. Okay, caller from the infamous 111 area code.
Okay, is this a battle between insurance companies versus free health care?
I don't know the precise answer to that question, but I think it's an excellent question, and I suspect that the answer is that it's a battle between insurance companies and their ability to make as much profit as possible. I think that's part of the skirmish that's going on, and I don't think that's the only part of it. I don't think the extremes are free or super rich. I just think that there's a battle along some lines for somebody to continue to make as much money as they possibly can, and they're reluctant to concede much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now where's the basis in fact for that particular type of assumption?
Well, that's my assumption, and that's my assumption based on my personal experiences and my opinions about the way the world works and the things I've seen and the experiences I've had. That's just my personal opinion based on a lifetime of experience and education and practical application. It's take it or leave it.
Okay, so it's your own empirical evidence.
It's my opinion. I mean, it's opinion based on all my experience.
Empirical evidence means your own experiences.
So from your own experiences.
Caller, mm-hmm. why are you asking this? Do you have
because I'm listening. I just came in. It seems to me that I may have been the battle. So I wanted to find out if that was it or if you had something else on the agenda. Because I happen to believe in capitalism, and yeah, there are a lot of companies. If you give them free rein, they will try to make a dollar by killing off the competition, like Rockefeller did. But then when I hear generalizations about the insurance company, the pharmaceutical company, and the other companies without even knowing what their books are like, without even having a viable business, then I want to know where their assumptions come from.
Well, and that's a very legitimate inquiry, and I also think that the rule against generalizations is something that applies equally to you as it does to everyone else.
Yeah.
And you know, again, I think the question you ask is a very valid one, and the honest answer, in my opinion, is there's some truth to that skirmish or battleground, but there's a lot more going on than just that.
Okay, and what's going on more than just that skirmish about certain industries trying to make a buck? It seems to me that you're saying they're making a buck at the expense of other people. That's what it seems like to me, what your female caller is saying.
Well, okay, all right.
Let's talk about your opinion. What exactly is your opinion?
I just gave it. I said I'm a capitalist, and I do agree that there are companies who will kill their competitors like Rockefeller did. But it doesn't mean that all industries are trying to do that in that way. I gave my opinion.
Yeah. And
Let's talk pharmaceutical companies.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. They spend a lot of money developing a new drug. And they like to hold on to that patent as long as they can. Hell, if someone invented aspirin tomorrow, you know, it would be $30 a tablet.
You couldn't invent aspirin tomorrow because aspirin's already been discovered or invented and
okay.
probably
I was using that as...
Actually, I know what you're getting at. The thing is that why patents and why these unreasonable profits? Well, patents are necessary in order to protect those who have invented something from having it being ripped off the next day.
Okay, so let's say cancer drugs cost so much?
Because the FDA requires something like 14 years of experimentation and clinical evidence before the patent on a cancer drug, or I doubt there is a patent on a cancer drug, unless you're talking about these cocktails, and those patents are just useless patents because no cancer drug from the pharmaceuticals actually works. But the R&D that goes into 14 years of experimentation trying to fulfill the requirements of the government is what makes these drugs expensive.
Okay. How about the the interesting test for potential breast cancer? Someone apparently has managed to patent a part of the human genome. No one else can do it. The test is horribly expensive. That doesn't seem like a particularly good way forward. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know exactly what you're talking about.
Let me ask the caller a question. I appreciate many of the things that you're saying, and you're offering basically a defense of capitalism. And I don't think anybody is saying that capitalism shouldn't exist. It's a natural extension of human nature. You talked about capitalism, and you talked about one of the vices of capitalism being injuries that are done to competitors. And I thought that was curious, because I personally am more concerned about what capitalism does to consumers.
Okay.
And I think that there are tremendous risks inherent in capitalism if it's not checked and regulated. And I can cite many instances of intentional malfeasance by large companies that subject consumers to incredible, horrific risks, horrible, horrible injuries and illnesses and severe traumas solely in the pursuit of money. Nobody is saying that capitalism should be done away with. But like every system of human behavior, there are checks and balances that need to be in place, and they all need to function on a more or less reasonable way. Otherwise, you have an ecosystem that's out of control. So the way we got off on this discussion was talking about, you know, affordable health care legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were trying to do is talk about, or at least what I was pursuing, are all the problems inherent in trying to implement what everyone at some point in time during this conversation, and I'll give you a chance to address it in a moment, everyone in this conversation thought was some sort of worthwhile goal, was to provide some sort of national minimal health care support. Now, what do you think about that?
No, I don't want national minimal health care support. Because everybody thinks it's free, but it's not free. A lot of people believe in the system, either anti-capitalist, people don't know the capitalist philosophy well, believe that government should step in and start providing for everybody. But they don't realize that no matter what the government does, it's costing people money in the way of taxes and inflation.
Well, that's capitalism. Nothing's for
that's
free.
That's not
everything
capitalism. Costs. That's governmental interference. Well, like I said, people who don't know the capitalist philosophy.
Well, you can talk about philosophy. I'm talking about the real world.
The government, when it steps in, is not a capitalist part of that philosophy. The government operates on its own political philosophy.
Nothing
not
is free. Nothing is free. It sounds like capitalism to me. That's what you said.
That's not what I said. That would be
sure,
exactly
what you said.
That's so stupid. Of course, it's not what I said.
Well, it sounded like it.
Well, then you have to clean out your ears because I already told you. Why?
I'm all ears. You tell me what you said. Everything costs something. That's what you said.
I said when the government steps in, then it costs people money because the government, through taxes, through the issuing of bonds, through inflation, costs taxpayers money. That has nothing to do with capitalism. Capitalism
is commerce. You don't think that government should try to provide some sort of basic minimal health care for people?
That's what I said.
And so,
no.
That's right. Okay, I'm just clarifying. So now if somebody is poor or sick or doesn't have health insurance or for whatever reason, your response to them is too bad.
My response to them is to go to free hospitals, which have been around for decades, for example, Catholic charity hospitals, other charities which are around to help the poor and which worked back in the 40s and 50s and prior to that, before the government stepped in with HMOs and starting to regulate everything and making everything go sky high. If you're poor, you could and still can go to an emergency care and you have to get treated by law.
You know, it's like something out of a Charles Dickens novel, but okay, I understand what you're saying. And so you basically don't want the government to be regulating anything?
I don't want government in anything, because the government will mess things up worse than you can imagine. I know people believe, and I can understand that, because I used to believe the same way, that the government should do it. Why? Because I kept telling us that ever since we were in first grade. But when you take a look at the history of government and how it's expanding, take a look at what's happening today. They're talking about raising the debt ceiling, $16 trillion. Why? That's because government believes it has the power, and some of them believe they have the almighty God-given right to regulate everything that man does. But take a look at what they've done. They've made a mess of everything. Anything that government can do, private sectors, I'll say the private sector, the industries within it, can do better because they have a profit motive. The government does not have a profit motive, nor does it have an altruistic bone in its body.
So you don't want things like the Food and Drug Administration.
No.
You don't want any kind of regulation over food or pharmaceuticals or medicine or commercial air traffic. You think that the private sector will look out for consumers on its own?
Not exactly on its own, but you've heard of Consumers Union, right?
I've heard of many forms of Consumer Union,
okay. And there are tort suits. When industries get out of line, when they exceed their grasp, they get sued, and there are warning signals, such as Consumers Union, which allow the consumers to know and to make choices. You can either choose A or B or C. When the consumer is properly informed, they vote with their feet and they vote with their wallets. When a company cannot perform well, either because it's greedy, or because it's stupid, it just goes the way of extinction. That's the way it should happen. Unless an industry or unless a business can actually perform up to the consumer's expectations, that industry goes out of business. Well, not the industry, but that particular company goes out of business, which is what should happen if you can't perform up to what the consumer wants. If government comes in, then you've got dumb people being employed by the government, doing dumb policies, implementing stupid procedures which mess things up.
Well, you certainly have a lot of basis to draw that conclusion, but I tend not to believe in extremes, and I tend to not be in favor of something that's completely unregulated and uncontrolled. I've seen what these companies do to people. I've seen bodies, dead people, paralyzed. I've seen awful things. And I don't trust tort litigation to be enough of a predator in the ecosystem to keep everything in check.
Well, if you want the government to do it, take a look at what the government's doing. Take a look.
I think that a world without some form of regulation and government is just as nonsensical as a world that doesn't accept capitalism. I think that government.
So you believe regulation is good?
I believe that it can be good, and that the absence of it is a great evil.
Under
okay.
what circumstances?
All right,
the regulation
I'm going to jump in and see if any of the Moffy family are still on the line.
My wife handed me the phone. I was the message.
Nice
to
be.
Well, actually, I want to say some good news. But thank you for my wife to pick it for me that the Indians did clinch with the home field advantage Wednesday. So I'm very excited to announce that on Wednesday the Cleveland Indians will be hosting either Tampa Bay or Texas for the wild card. And I want to let my wife I'll give her a big kiss later on because like she was yakking. I got to watch that first time in a long time. 8 years to see the Indians get to the playoffs. So anyway, I listened to the debate between Peter and the caller, and it was a very good debate, and I enjoyed it. But the caller, I used to be one who was for government regulation. You have to have regulation, and you have to have a better government and better business. Because as Simon will tell you, we're both big fans, and I'm just got my tongue in my cheek with this, of Monsanto. Now, Monsanto is the biggest food operator in the world, and private company, profit-driven, as you said. But the problem is they own the Food and Drug Administration. They have employees.
That's exactly the problem.
Fascist. Well, not the problem, but because the regulations are a good thing. I agree with Peter. We have to have regulation. The problem is now government and business are so incestually related, they're both one and the same. And big business is big government. Big government is big business. And we the people are getting it up the you-know-what. And that's got to stop because government business now knows, hey, I need tax breaks. So they go write the bills. They lobby these politicians. And, everyone talks about I can't believe, like I said, I would thought the Republicans were committing suicide with this government shutdown of Obamacare. Then my wife and I got a letter which started this conversation about health care in the mail, and we're getting the shaft.
That's what everybody voted for.
Right, go Republican.
Except
they're doing the right thing.
The Republicans did not vote for it.
I understand that, and I'm saying I hope they shut the government down and educate people, because when I sit up there and listen to Obama on Friday, Harry Reid refuses to negotiate, and meanwhile my health care bill is going up $500.
And so are
other Americans. But why is that happening? Because the health care industry is in bed with the government, and they are loving this. As Peter has pointed out many
times.
That's
not capitalism. That's fascism.
It's terrible. It's not, but you do need, because capitalism used to work in this country until after the Civil War. Then the Gilded Age took over, and that's when you go back and study your history. That's when corporations became
corporations by themselves can't force you to buy them, not buy the product.
The corporation can be an individual, which is bullshit, but I can't do anything about that. Way back in 1865, I forget what
that's,
it was.
That's neither here nor there. The thing is that corporations cannot force you to buy their products, and they don't put you in jail.
They can force you to get you addicted.
Where are you going to go buy your food if you can't grow it? If you live in a community where the zoning laws don't allow you to grow your own food,
zoning laws, that's politics.
Well, because I'm telling you, politics and government,
That's right. Business. If you
together,
had pure, if you had small, very small government in which the government did not have rules and regulations over everything that we do, as I said before, this is one reason why you don't want government in our lives. Because
and I understand that. I have a healthy respect for that. But I also have a healthy respect for, I don't trust these corporations now. Now, maybe we're not talking about the corporations of today.
Corporations
are
not angels. You don't have to trust them. I don't trust them either. The thing is, if you leave
them... Why do you
want to
give them, why do you want to give them power?
I want them to have power versus the government having
power. Now, the consumer is supposed to... here's what you're wrong. It's the citizen, the consumer, that's supposed to have the power in this country.
What did I say before? What did I say before? The consumer... Consumers' union. The consumer should have a choice between A and B, as we have it right now.
A consumer should have a choice between A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, but we can't, especially now, unless it's a revolution, because one corporation can buy another corporation, which can buy another corporation, and they're all one corporation.
That has nothing to do with
consumer
choice. That has to do with interlocking directories.
The
thing is that if government...
The consumer has no choices. That in
you don't have a
world,
choice? Name me a corporation.
Let me see.
Wait a minute. Name me a corporation that forced you to buy their product.
Yes, they do.
Monsanto.
That's what you're wrong.
Huh?
Because if I want to go, where do I go get my groceries from? I have to eat. I'm not allowed to grow it in my community.
So who forced you to buy
that
product?
Who forced me to eat? My body forces me to eat.
Okay, so which corporation? Okay. So you don't want the corporation to provide food?
This is really simple. Monsanto is the name. Go to your grocery store.
And Monsanto is infecting the entire world with their GMO as a result of being in bed with the governments. If they weren't in bed with the governments internationally, they would then say, well, I want my GMO in these particular foods. And if the government said, sorry, we don't have the power to enforce that, they can't do it.
Sure they can.
That's exactly what they do.
They can break the law.
They can break the law, and they get caught. That's not a good rebuttal. And they get caught. But it's true. I talked about torts, remember? So if they
believe me, I know a lot about torts.
Good. Then they can get sued. Then they stop. Or if they still want to continue, they can do it. They can tort themselves right out of business.
It's not as easy to sue companies as you think, my friend.
So it's better to have a law which allows them to do what they're doing.
I never said they should. Their law should allow them to do what they're doing. No, I'm not. You said that just because there's a law, they can't do it, and that's absurd.
They can't.
Sure, they can. They can break the law anytime they want.
How? How are they going to do it?
They just do it. They break the law. Look.
No. How are they going to do it? If the law says
the law is only effective if it's broken. If they're caught, if it's brought to light, if it's enforced, if they're prosecuted, and if they pay for it. It is answering your question. It's the truth.
Tell me how Monsanto would introduce GMOs into the crops, into the ecosystem, internationally, unless they were in bed with the government.
Okay, I honestly don't know.
Okay, I'm glad you said that.
Right.
Finally, somebody finally said, I don't know. The whole thing.
I said it. I don't know.
All right, here's the cute deal. Monsanto even has an in with the Supreme Court. What's his name? Clarence Thomas.
Clarence Thomas.
Right. So don't give me this bullshit. Most of foreign aid that we give countries.
First of all, Clarence Thomas is the most ineffective judge on the court. Shut up, or I can mute your mic. Nobody's fucking impressed.
All right. I've muted him. Okay. Most of the foreign aid comes in two forms. Food and arms. And all of the food and arms are actually generated from the U.S. You know, we give arms to people, comes from, you know, indigenous manufacturers, and all of the food aid comes from Monsanto and companies like it. Uh-oh, I lost him. What a shame.
Did you nuke him? Did you nuke him?
No, I just muted him.
And he's gone now?
He nuked himself.
Well, look, he raises very good points. I don't agree with many or most of them, but you know, it's all part and parcel of what we've been talking about here today. I mean, he feels very strongly in his position, and I can understand that and respect that. Like I said, I don't agree with it, but when we're talking about implementing any kind of change, you know, we've seen opinions all over the map this morning. And I think all the opinions are valid, and I think they all have support. I don't necessarily agree with all of them, but you know, this is just the hallmark of our modern world. You know, if we want to try to solve problems, we have to navigate this political minefield. And you know, on some ends of the spectrum, you'll have people who feel very strongly that there should be no government at all, and on the other and at other portions in the spectrum, you'll have people who believe that something needs to be done. Some change needs to be implemented. There are some things that government should do. I guess the bigger point to me is, you know, I don't see getting rid of government any more than I see getting rid of capitalism. They're both here to stay, and they're not going anywhere. And I think they're both byproducts of human nature. If you get any collection of people together anywhere, a natural government starts to form. That's human nature. People don't live together unless there's some manner of organization, some manner of politics, and some manner of governmental hierarchy. You cannot avoid it. It's just as consistent with human nature as the need to pursue capitalism and wealth. You can't get rid of one and not the other. You can't get rid of either one. So, you know, it's fine to talk about philosophies and theories and anything that you want to call an ism, but that just doesn't adequately describe the real world. And the real world is, you know, governments exist, businesses exist, capitalism exists, law abiders exist, law breakers exist, people who are generous exist, people who are selfish exist. It's just a cacophony of opinion out there, and here we are trying to resurrect or implement some type of change, and it's we're talking about healthcare, and we're going to shut down the government over it. A month ago, Syrians were gassed to death, and nobody wanted to do anything. And we're talking about implementing healthcare legislation here, and we have people who are lying in front of trains, ready to stop government and go into a funding crisis. I guess effective as of midnight tonight. You know, that's democracy working efficiently again.
It's not till Monday night.
Well, Monday night. Is it Monday night?
Well, you know what, Peter? I have to understand, you know, obviously, once Obama and once the Democrats drumbeated all these exemptions, the plan should have been by both parties to make it work. You know what I mean? And they did not. Obviously, I can tell by the letter my wife and I got. You know, and we're not the exception. We're the rule. This is a flawed. It was a great idea, and I do agree with the caller that government gets these great ideas and they implement it terribly because politics gets involved, favoritism gets involved, and Peter, and I agree with you, big business gets their claws in it for the profit thing because they're in bed together. And it's happened to say, Peter, wasn't it correct me if I'm wrong, was it the slaughterhouse rule that gave the corporations all the power?
Oh, I'm glad you said that. You made this whole conversation got me thinking back to Upton Sinclair and the jungle. It was a slaughterhouse. And basically, for those who are too young or don't remember, you know, in the early 1900s, the age of industrialization in America, you know, some of these slaughterhouses, some of these factories, some of these large businesses, they were the innermost circles of Dante's Inferno. They were pure hell. They were filthy. They were horrible. They spread disease. People were getting killed and injured in an indiscriminate manner. There are all kinds of tales of people getting locked in factories and burned because shop owners or business owners wouldn't do certain things or allow certain things. You know, you needed regulation and change to implement changes into those systems. And if you don't learn from mistakes that happen along the way or egregious acts, and you don't implement some type of change, well, you're just not evolving. And that's part of the problem with, in my opinion, someone just saying, well, that's it. Government's done enough. Shut them down. Get rid of them. They're gone. We're perfectly capable of taking care of everybody ourselves now. I don't believe that for a minute. And the I know you agree with me. And the slaughterhouses were a classic example of that. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I know that. But what scares me is when people found out about it because they weren't known, they did make change. Government did step up to the plate. I think Teddy Roosevelt was one of the greatest reformers of all time. He broke monopolies up. He saw all that. At the slaughterhouse, he was the president at the turn of the century, in the 19th century. And he was a great reformer. He did a lot of things. And they couldn't wait to throw him out of the Republican Party because, he took on the trust. He was the trust breaker. He was this. He was that. Great reformer. All right. Well, he gets in, and all of a sudden, where we were then, we're right back to where we were in the Gilded Age, where the corporations in bed with government are running the show. And until we break that stranglehold, as Simon has shown me lots of stuff with Monsanto, they will have direct impacts on who the Food and Drug Administration bills are passed because they control them. They're ex-employees of theirs. Or Monsanto has contacted the FDA guy and said, hey, look, after you do this for us and when you retire, you'll be a consultant for us at $500 a year. Am I right, Simon?
You're absolutely right.
I mean, these guys know that. Where do they, Peter, you know what scares you? And where do all these government officials go after the terms of our office run? Go to corporations. And they lobby, and they know the system. The ex-senator gets favors because the other senators love him. He loves them. They were friends together. They passed bills. They shot golf and all that stuff. And we have these politicians who become lobbyists or actual employees of these other corporations, and they screw us even more because now they have all the inside workings in our code. And until we stop that, we're getting the worst of both worlds in government and big business, and we should be getting the best. And that's
okay.
A scary thing.
Right. I want to go back to the original idea. You know, everyone in the Republican Party wants to apparently shut down the government. And they seem to have this delusion that they're going to defund Obamacare. But that's not going to happen.
Well, I've got to blame the Democrats in the Senate. They're the ones who, like, today the House worked on bills, whether we like it or not. They were working this weekend. The Senate, because their senatorial privileges, all took off under Harry Reid. You know what the president is today? Golfing with the vice president. Okay? What are our priorities here, okay? And this president does not sold his program. Yeah, he sold it to the media. Now let's talk about something least we forget. For Republicans and Democrats, their staff, their families, their friends and allies are all exempted from paying higher wages, or they get a better subsidy. And that's bullshit. Okay, when is the American people going to wake up and say, what about us? Why is it always about the government and when we're not playing fair? They're not playing fair here, Peter, both Republicans
and
Democrats, okay?
This is going to be a bloodbath because, as far as I can tell, the two sides are extremely far apart. The Democrats in the administration, generally speaking, are of the position that there's not going to be any change to Obamacare. And the Republicans, generally speaking, are saying they're not going to do anything unless there is change. And, I hate to draw the parallel, but the Republicans are basically taking a gun out, and they're pointing it at the system, and they're saying, look, we're going to kill the system unless you give us what we want. And
all they're asking for is a year delay, and I think since Obama's already exempted many people, for many organizations and people for a year. Why not the rest of the country and work on the kinks? Is that okay?
Maybe you're right. I'm not clear that it's that simple as far as the difference between the two. But maybe you're right. But then
that's
again,
what they're asking for. Am I right, Simon? You know, they want a year delay.
Well, that may be one of the things they're asking for. I don't know if it's the only thing they're asking for. And,
that I don't know
and
either.
In many respects, you know, if you're the administration and you've already won this victory, you got this law approved and you've got it signed into law and you had it affirmed by the Supreme Court, and now people are coming back to you after the fact saying, well, I want to negotiate. I mean, the only thing I can compare it to is like going to trial. And, you know, you go to trial and you win and you get your judgment. And afterwards they say, okay, you got a judgment. Now let's talk. And they're availing themselves of every tool in their political arsenal to do that. And I guess that's all fair games in politics.
When Obama started exempting. That's the problem, Peter. I agree with what you just said. But the problem began when the law was passed, affirmed by the Supreme Court. Then all of a sudden, everyone got exempted but the people. Corporations are exempt. Unions are exempt. Government employees are exempt.
I don't know who quote unquote made these exemptions, but
Health and Human Services. Health and Development Agency.
If you're saying there should be no exemptions, I don't know about that either. I don't know enough about.
No, I'm not saying. I'm saying once the exemption started for this law of the land upheld by the Supreme Court. Then I disagree with you. Then the law wasn't the same. They passed the law, then they started exempting everybody from the law. And now the Republicans have been trying to say, hey, because you're exempting A through X, you know, how about exempting Z, the American people that are going to have to pay higher wages, and let's go back to the drawing board and figure this thing out, because it is the law of the land, but the law of the land is getting exemptions. So how does that work, Peter?
Well, do you really think that the effort in opposition right now is directed at trying to reach some sort of compromise, or do you think it's just directed at trying to derail the whole thing?
They can't derail it, so that's impossible.
I don't know. If you can delay something long enough, you can derail it. Believe me, I've seen it in action.
I have not. I think they need. I want national health care. Obviously, the Affordable Care Act, aka Obama, isn't. Even Democrats have run from it, have been exempted. Even unions, all the typical Democrat constituents have run from it because they want exemptions. That's not fair. And corporations have been able to run for it. And let's face it, as I said earlier before my wife got on the line, I was talking to the bank tellers at PNC, the bank, and they were no one works 40 hours anymore because of this. Think about that. So this is not, no one looked into this, you know, it was a great idea. I'm for national health care. I want to see costs come down. I want to see anybody get health care. I think people who live healthy lives, like, there should be a tax on those burritos that, you know, Taco Bell should have a $50 tax to sell those tacos. You know what I mean? Healthier places should be cheaper. I mean, you know, force people to live healthier lives and health care would go down. We tax cigarettes like crazy. We should be taxing foods that are bad for us like crazy and things of that nature to help people to live healthier lives, to make those decisions. Why do people go to Taco Bell? The scary part is maybe that's all they can afford.
I think there's an answer to why do people go to Taco Bell or other places like that. I don't want to just pick on Taco Bell. But fast food in general has been proven, in my opinion, to be very unhealthy for people. It's very bad to eat it in large and continual quantities, but people still do it. Now, is that because people are exercising free choice? I don't know. I'm not so convinced that companies aren't putting things and additives in food that make people start to crave it and to a certain extent become addicted to it. It wouldn't be the first time in American history that things like that happened.
It's called MSG.
Well, MSG is one form of it, but they became aware of that, and then consumers started to protest it. But that doesn't convince me that companies haven't figured out other ways to get people addicted on their food. And to that extent, that's taking away choice. But there's a more fundamental problem, and it goes beyond just things like additives and chemicals and things like that, is that not everyone has the same ability to make choices and the same level of education and awareness. It's just a fact. And, you know, you're either going to try to do the best you can for as many people as you can, or you're just going to say, that's it, dog eat dog, go get them, everybody for themselves.
Okay, so let's, for a moment, assume that the government is going to shut down at midnight Monday. What does it really do? I, for one, I'm really glad to know that it doesn't affect the NSA, snooping on everyone. But, you know, it will affect people that want to visit Yellowstone Park. I mean, where's the sense in this?
I don't know. As far as political practices go, to the extent people are opposed or want to defund Obamacare, this is as effective a strategy as you can get, because you're gonna bring the system to a halt, and you're gonna force everyone to be involved in this decision. And maybe in some crazy way, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
No, but you're not. I mean, Obamacare is not affected. It's funded.
Well, it's not affected directly, but a government shutdown will affect everyone. And
the only thing it shuts down, people can't go to the monument. But Simon's 100% right. The military's going to get paid. They passed a bill on that, rightfully so.
Okay.
People are going to get their checkies in the mail. The postman will be very popular today on Tuesday. They're going to get their checkies. About a third of the federal government employees will have to get furloughed. And you know what happens when then 6 months later, when they fix everything, they get reimbursed. So it's a bunch of bullshit by the Democrats to say the government, they're like Chicken Little. The sky is falling. The sky is not falling. The government's still going to go on. I wish it wouldn't, but unless it changed.
The government may go on, as you say, but at some point, if this situation isn't resolved, somebody's going to have to blink or the government will shut down.
Well, usually that's what you hear, the scary part. Leadership is lacking in the House, the Senate, and the President, because you would think these people who get paid brutal amounts of money, get all sorts of things, you know, would want to think, hey, you know what? The American people deserve better. The American people deserve better. We need to sit down and work on the government or this. Because you know what happens next? In 2 weeks, we run out of money anyway.
Well, the debt ceiling
comes up, so we have to borrow more money to keep the government operating. That's already $17 trillion in debt, and that's a whole other story. I mean, where's that coming from? And what killed me on our letter that my wife read it to you, if you remember it, it said you might be eligible for a subsidy. If I am, I don't know, but let's say I am, who's paying for that? The government? Where are they getting that money from? Are they borrowing it from China? Are they taxing Warren Buffett? I mean, is Warren Buffett paying for me? I don't know. You know, I think we could do better. I know we can do better.
Okay, here's my plan. If you're going to partially shut down the government, stop paying all of the assholes in the Senate and the House, regardless.
And the President.
Right. And all of the people that work for them. And you watch how fast they fix it. Rather than lay off or furlough, the poor people that work in Yellowstone Park. In fact, close down the NSA.
Yeah, close down the NSA. You know what, Simon? They won't be able to spy on their boyfriends and girlfriends.
Right.
You remember we read that? Yes. They spend more time, Peter, I don't know if you know this, there was a study done, and they spend more time on the NSA spying on their boyfriends, girlfriends, or wannabe boyfriends, or wannabe girlfriends, or the husbands and wives. That's what this wonderful government does for us.
Who knows
that
they do?
Now, be fair here. You can't blame Obama. The Bush people did it.
Oh, absolutely. I think Bush and Obama are going to go down in history. Two of the worst presidents we ever had when history reports back at everything. Because of who they, the policies that they favored, the printing of the money to keep Wall Street afloat, select few, just favoritism, blatant favoritism of, and it's only benefited a few. I mean, everyone thought Obama was going to be, that's all you ever heard, Obama was going to steal from the rich and give to the poor. Well, that's not true. He has given more to the rich, and we've all become poor. And I'm amazed by the statistics that have come out. Since the crash in 08, that say that. The rich have gotten richer under Obama, and the poor have gotten poor. And the gap in the middle class, is still, what's left of us, is shrinking like crazy. That's why when I get this letter in the mail from a healthcare provider that I thought, hey, this was a good idea. I like the idea of national health care. I was told my costs were going to go down, better service, blah, 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 blah. And you know what happens? None of the above. It goes up. And I'm telling you, I support the Republicans because of that. Now, if my health care would have went down like they said it was going to be, and this and that, I'd be screaming like I'd be just mad at the Democrat Republicans. But by them delaying this, Peter, I keep $500 more a month in my pocket right now. $500 is a lot of money.
Well, it's a lot of money, period, and. The delay is going to, whatever is going to happen at midnight tonight or tomorrow night, whenever it is going to happen. They're not going to reach a compromise before then. And we'll see what happens next.
Well, it all looks ugly.
It's ugly and it's messy, but you know.
Can we all agree we deserve better?
Well,
we deserve better.
I don't know. Sometimes I really wonder what people deserve. I really don't know.
I mean, we deserve a better government. With the World Wide Web, technology, the wealth I've always said this, and I'm going to say it again. There's enough money to go around, but when I read studies that say that the government provided all these stings with the DEA to find illegal cigarettes that were being manufactured and sold, and the chief informant got $4.9 million bonus because he said he had expenses to meet, and we okayed that. It's like, it boggles my mind. I mean, you're fighting over to keep this government going, and all it does is waste. And that's only one little item. Or I sent this to Simon, I don't know if you got it, some government bureaucrat in the Obama administration opens up his bottom shelf, finds a shoebox of $300 million, and they fly up to Detroit, and they go, hey, here's $300 million for you. That's not going to solve the problems in Detroit.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
not going to solve the problems in Detroit.
That one. Detroit files bankruptcy, and suddenly, here's a $300 million gift.
Right. And it's just ridiculous because take that $300 million and go give 300 families $1 million. You'd be better off. The economy would be better off. I mean, after all, it is our money. But Detroit's shot. But, I never could understand that when the bailouts have all taken place up top. And it's not, and contrary to Ronald Reagan and Arthur Laffer, so there's no trickle down once the government and the big business get a hold of the money.
Trickles down
is them pissing on us.
Now, I might be completely wrong, but I believe that the last census has us pegged at something like 340 million people. Am I correct on that?
Well, I don't know, but let's see what the great computer
has to say. I'm not going to argue that with you.
All right. So 300 million, that would be almost, $800,000 for every man, woman, and child, in the U.S. Wow. Hey, I wouldn't mind that kind of payday.
Nobody would.
Just imagine what you could do with that kind of money.
Just imagine what would happen to the economy. It would explode in job creation, people paying off debts, people making additions, hiring people, buying new stuff, paying off the college debt. It would be a day of jubilee, as they used to say in the Old Testament. We did have that, but it went top up, right? Wall Street got bailed out. Main Street did not. And matter of fact, people were talking about that at one point.
It would be nice if everyone in America got some sort of little bailout money to help them. I think it would do tremendous things to help jumpstart the economy. But even suggesting it, the very same companies and the very same people that held their hand out would blaspheme the idea. And they would denigrate it, and they would fight it to their graves. And it's a shame. Something even reasonable, $50,000, $10,000, whatever it is, which many of these entities think are chump change in the grand picture. But it's not going to happen, unfortunately.
No, and I agree with you. But isn't that sad what you just said, Peter? It's a great idea. It would help the economy. We all know that. People could use the money. We all know that stuff. But the very people who benefited, this would be Wall Street, would put up a roadblock that would never allow it to happen, and it would be, and isn't that sad? Yet they themselves benefited in 08 and 09, and to this day, under Ben Bernanke and quantitative easing, get $95 billion a month more. And you notice whenever Bernanke says, gee, I might ease up on the pedal, the stock market goes into the tank. They're addicted to that stuff. They make crack addicts. Wall Street makes crack addicts look like sober people.
What they could have done without spending a dollar out of pocket was when everybody else in the government was getting a bailout, they could have basically just given a blanket bailout to everyone in America. They could have forgiven all unsecured credit debt, which is no different than Chapter 7 bankruptcy. And they could have implemented some sort of mandatory restructuring of all home loans consistent with the market collapse. And those two things in and of itself, in my opinion, would have greatly increased spending ability of all Americans. And it would have been like putting cash in their pockets. And it wasn't like government itself wasn't doing the exact same thing. But the mere suggestion of it in the ears of some is worthy of a lynching. So there you go. That's the world we live in.
Huh. Well, I wouldn't mind $800,000.
Well, I wouldn't mind it either. But I'm just saying, at a time period when the country was in a mess, and it's still in a mess, those little things could have gone a long way. But there are people who will say, I can imagine someone like our caller or somebody else would say, well, they don't have to get, they can go declare bankruptcy, they can go do that, they can go do this. And they can do that. And many Americans struggled not to do that because they thought it was a tremendous badge of shame and stigma, and they were going to fight it out and stick it through. And they're precisely the ones who are getting crushed right now.
Right. It's people like us. I think that's what you really mean.
Well, I know so many hardworking people who really struggle, and they work hard, and they could use some help. And they're not going to get it. It's a shame, but they're just not going to get it. And they don't have all the education that a lot of other people have, and they don't have all the assistance that a lot of other people have. But people look down on them. They say, well, that's just, you made that choice. That's your lot in life. That's your problem. And, you know, it's not something I agree with. I think it's kind of sad, but nothing that I can see is ever going to change it, because, you know, there are some people who will just, they won't give an inch under any circumstance.
Gentlemen, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm already way over my time limit. Let's go around the table and, you know, have one last, you know, kick at the cat. Sam, your parting thoughts for us.
Well, I want to thank you guys. I hope my wife entertained you. She was very entertained and allowed me to watch the Indians clinch, so that was exciting. That caller, was very interesting, Peter, you and him going. Thank you, caller, for calling in. People are listening. I think that's 2 weeks in a row. We've had some calls. That's awesome. Simon, thank you for the opportunity. Peter, the government's going to shut down for about a day, and then it won't be a big deal, and both sides will spring mud at each other. Our lives will go on. We'll grind it out. Just like we do all the other time. And then in the next couple of weeks, we'll have the debt limit conference. We'll have this big debt limit to talk about. So until that time, everyone have a wonderful Sunday and go try.
And Peter, your parting words.
Well, Sam, I completely agree with your assessment of this looming government shutdown. I've always believed it's just political posturing, and I don't know how it's going to get resolved, but I'm sure it will. And, Sam, I wanted to thank you, and I wanted to thank your lovely wife. She was spectacular. She entertained us and educated us, and I was very grateful to hear from her. And I was very grateful to hear from our caller. I know that sometimes we have sharp differences of opinion, but that's what democracy is all about. It's about expressing your ideas and debating them in public to the extent that that's what we're doing. So I thank that caller. And Simon, I thank you too. And, you know, as I always say, we've solved one or two problems today, but we got a lot more to go.
Oh, we got a bunch. I didn't even get halfway down the list. Gentlemen, we will be back next week. Well, assuming you're up for the adventure. Till then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. And we will be back next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.